Thanksgiving the way it's supposed to be is rays of light streaming from the cracks in our body. Thanksgiving the way it's supposed to be is the family all together. Everyone makes it back home. There are no flight delays, no unexpected deadlines at work, no competing events in separate cities, no in-laws acting like outlaws who take the new baby to celebrate with the other set of grandparents. Thanksgiving the way that it's supposed to be is everyone sitting around the kitchen working together to make dinner. It's stories being told honoring tender moments and understanding sacrifice and declaring appreciations. There is no shushing of little children, no rolling of eyes, no mumbling under the breath, no tears of shame or guilt, no judgmental remarks. Thanksgiving the way that it's supposed to be is lifting our glasses in a toast of gratitude for health and for the blessings of this time and the food which is shared in love. There are no bottles hidden in cabinets and closets, no back rooms that are punctuated by yelling and the smell of beer or the sound of football, no slurry speeches at dinner that start with, "Well, it's about time someone had the guts to finally say what's really wrong with this family." Thanksgiving, the way that it's supposed to be, is playing games after dinner, after everything has been cleaned up. It's laughter and teamwork and the support that we yearn for. It's not sending your stepmother into bankruptcy for landing on Park Place with 5 hotels. It's not a long-winded diatribe about why I always have to be the shoe. I mean, ever since I was 5, I had to be the shoe. Well, I'm sick of being the damn shoe. How come Alice never has to be the shoe? And you know what? You can take this stupid shoe and you... Thanksgiving, the way it's supposed to be, is everyone sitting together in contentment. Tears of appreciation, or better yet, tears that come from going past the threshold of laughter. Sore bellies from so much laughter. It's not tears of regret or loneliness or tears that come from being unable to muster the courage to return home. Tears that come from being unable to choose the path that leads toward healing. Thanksgiving, the way it's supposed to be, is rays of light streaming from the cracks in our body. Thanksgiving, the way it's supposed to be, is finding that yellow crayon, or better yet, having someone come visit you who has a whole box of them, and then learning how to use them to draw petals on the flower growing inside you. This is a sermon this morning about Thanksgiving. Although I will tell you at the outset, you have to look hard for the thankful part of it, because whatever thanks it contains is only found after we've accepted the harder parts, the parts that have known a lot of pain, that had to be patched up in order to keep our spirit from leaking out. In 1947, David Chetlahay Paladin returned home after being away for 12 years. He brought the hurts that he had carried with him for the past decade. He returned to say goodbye, but found instead the true meaning of Thanksgiving. David Chetlahay Paladin was born in 1926 on a Navajo reservation in Arizona. Because the U.S. Census wouldn't accept his clan name, bitter water. They gave him the name of the nearest landmark, the Paladin Mesa. His mother was native Navajo, and his father was a white Roman Catholic priest who left the village before he was born. His mother left him in the care of the elders, who then sent him off to join the nuns. He never saw her again. David grew up with a lot of questions and a God-sized hole that took up most of the room in his life and in his soul. By the age of 12, he started trying to pour alcohol into that hole, but that didn't work. He was just 14 when he stole away on a merchant ship to the South Seas, and it was on board that ship that he met another young boy from Germany named Ted, who was also running away from his pain. They became friends. They traveled together for a while, but at the outbreak of World War II, David was recruited by the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, a forerunner of the CIA. The Navajo language was a difficult one, and the Americans were using it to pass secret information behind enemy lines. The Germans, who never even knew that it was a language, could not crack the code. But early in the campaign, David was captured by the Germans, and he was sentenced to death as a spy. And it was while marching onto the train that was destined for the death chambers that David felt a rifle butt behind his back to hurry him along. And he turned around to see who it was, and it was Ted, the young boy who he had met 2 years earlier on the merchant ship, now a German officer. Ted managed to get him transferred to a prison camp. Once there, David was punished for trying to help a fellow prisoner. His feet were nailed to the floor for 3 days, and he was subject to other painful humiliation and torture. When the Allies liberated the concentration camps, they found David in a train car loaded with dead bodies. He weighed 62 pounds. They sent him to a veterans hospital in the States, where he drifted in and out of a coma for 2 years. When he finally regained consciousness, he had lost the use of both legs. For the next few years, he wallowed in hatred and self-pity. He couldn't walk, even though the doctors had worked to heal him and could find no medical reason why his legs wouldn't work. They finally gave up on him, telling him that he would likely spend the rest of his life as an invalid in some VA somewhere. When he heard this news, he decided to go back to the reservation one last time to say goodbye. When he arrived, the elders at the reservation, having not seen him for 12 years, were surprised, and they were saddened to see him in leg braces, barely able to stand. They held counsel. They brought him in. They asked him what had happened. They listened to his story without interruption. They asked questions. And they sat for a while in silence. And when they spoke, they told him this: "Chetlehe, you have given your spirit away to hate. Without your spirit, you cannot heal. You must reclaim your spirit." They then tied a rope around his waist, took the braces off of his legs, and threw him into the little Colorado River at high tide. David thrashed in the water for his life. He was to say later that it was the hardest single moment he ever experienced, harder than being nailed to the floor, not for the fear of death, which he would have welcomed, but because while fighting to stay above water, he noticed that images came flooding back into his memory. It was like a near-death experience. He witnessed all of his memories of loneliness and examples of meanness and the humiliation and torture that he had experienced. He couldn't change any of the images that were coming so quickly at him, but he noticed that in the effort to resist even noticing them or accepting them, that his spirit was just draining away. And the only alternative that he had was to let go of that resistance, and the only way to let go of that resistance was to forgive the people who were part of it. It was then that he realized every moment of hatred, every time he clenched his teeth, every time he shook his fist, every time he winced in pain, was a little bit of his spirit leaking out. And at some level, he understood it was his choice of where to put his attention and power. The hardest images to let go of were the ones of the concentration camps, but with each letting go came a corresponding increment of lightness. With the release of every negative energy, he felt himself becoming more buoyant. Each choice was a reclamation of his power until he had enough acceptance in his life to fill that God-sized hole. In the swirling water, as he released the anger and the pain, he felt a shift. It was a new capacity to hold positive energy. And a new voice spoke to him and said this, "Chetlehe, for years I have been trying to keep you from choosing death. The images that you have been holding on to are the only ones I could find which would give you enough energy to keep fighting death. But now it's time to let go of that rage. Now it is time to choose life." And it was at this point, it was at this choice, that Chetlehe's legs began to work again, and he swam back to shore. Just as the elders had hoped, David Chetlehe regained his spirit. David Chetlehe, paladin, became a shaman, and a healer, and a teacher, and an artist. He eventually regained the use of both of his legs and was able to walk without crutches. He died in 1984 at the age of 58. His story is inspiring. It's inspiring because replacing rage and malice and insecurity with acceptance and energy and power is like finding the yellow crayon in our lives and using it to color over the cracks until the light within us begins to pour out. It is at the heart of what we all feel when we really feel thanksgiving. Spiritual author and medical intuitive Carolyn Mace describes what I've been talking about when she talks about her work, which she calls energetics. Carolyn Mace was raised by nuns in a monastery, and early in her teens, she discovered an unusual capacity to sense people's energy. And after spending just a few minutes with someone, she could get a strong sense of where they were experiencing pain in their consciousness or in their body. And she studied with a Harvard medical doctor, Norman Shealy, who taught her a lot about anatomy. And her work as a medical intuitive is something that she describes in her book, Anatomy of the Spirit. But after a few years of this, she discovered that her real usefulness was not in giving medical readings. Her real usefulness was in helping people learn to monitor their own energy flow, helping people to learn to sense where their energy was draining away from them, and more than that, to spot the source, to spot the trigger, the hole where they were losing their power. And finally, she wanted to help people do something about it, more than just stopping in the middle of their life, in the middle of crossing the street and say, "Help, I'm leaking." Carolyn Mace studied Eastern spirituality and medicine, and she became fascinated with chakras, the centers of energy flow described by Eastern medicine. And she makes the point in energetics that the human body is a complex network of energy flow. And she describes her role as someone who can help others determine the wisest intentional distribution of their energy so that their life can actually accomplish what they were born to do. And Mace paints this very interesting logical scenario. She says, if we were all given a certain quanta of energy a day, she says, say $100 of energy, and that's all we had for the day, our goal would be to invest that $100 of energy positively. We would want to invest in activities and in people that gave a positive return on our investment. We would know that making poor investments would mean losing our energy and not having enough energy for the necessary things in life. And because those things would be necessary that needed to get done, we would have to borrow energy. We would have to go into energy debt. Where would we get the energy to pay off that debt? Well, Mace explains that we do one of two things to pay off our energy debt. One of them is to take energy from our cellular tissue, which, remember, is just a storage of energy. But after a while, you can tell when somebody has been running on energy debt. They begin to look tired, and they age rapidly. A body constantly running on a deficit budget of energy will eventually declare bankruptcy and shut down. And the other thing that happens for people running in an energy debt is that they look to get their energy from other people. They become somewhat parasitic, looking for somebody with positive energy that they can latch onto and suck off of. Each one of us, I bet, in this community right now, knows somebody who has done that. Everybody in this community right now, I bet, has done that themselves. Why is it so common for people to find themselves in energy debt? Carolyn Mace would say it's because we're not always very aware of the holes in our unconsciousness where energy and power drain away from us. We prefer to think that all of the energy that we have is always going to the tasks right in front of us. But she attests that most people spend a surprisingly small amount of their spiritual energy on the present moment right in front of them. Much of our energy, Mace believes, is lost to unproductive worry about the future. But even more than that, spiritual energy is constantly drained off by unresolved wounds of the past, unmet childhood needs that were never reconciled, like the attention and the affection and the affirmation that we didn't get as children. Each time we felt unaccepted was a moment our spirit was pierced, and by the time all those piercings are added up, there is a hole and the feeling of being unacceptable, which our power drains out of. Thanksgiving, the way that it really is the process of waking up one day and finally doing an audit of your energetic expenses and realizing, for example, that every day for the last 20 or so years, you realize that you have spent $30 every day on processing your mother's comments about your weight growing up. And $50 on the loneliness that you experienced during the years where no one spent time with you after school. And $10 worrying about whether you're lovable enough to find a partner or keep a partner. And you notice, after you do the math, you've got $10 left to spend on the rest of your life. $10 $10 to make it through that day, $10 to achieve all of your hopes and dreams, to become the person that you have always aspired to be. $10. Thanksgiving, the way it really is the morning your spirit comes to you, even in the midst of feeling like you are drowning against a great current, and asks you to choose life, to stop giving away so much of your power, to heal that God-sized hole that your power is draining out of. Thanksgiving, the way it really is hearing your spirit say, okay, I have a new vision of how our life could be, and I am going to need $90 of energy per day to make it happen. And that means if we really want this vision of what our life could be, we're going to have to start reclaiming some of that energy that has been leaking away from us. Thanksgiving, the way it really is when we do that work, when we start regaining the strength that is ours, that enables us to swim back to shore. It is when we finally face the frightening images that have been draining our energy for years. It is when we begin to reclaim the power of our past so that we can become more present. Thanksgiving, the way that it really is never easy. You think that box of yellow crayons is free? William Ballister lost a leg and 2 years of his life in order to find his box. And he had to learn how to dance. David Chetlehe had to look in bottles, had to look in concentration camps, and had to swim in a river where he was over his head to find his box. It will cost you $90 a day to get your box of crayons. But here's the good news. When we were born, each one of us was delivered onto this earth with a built-for-love nature. It was not our fault that we were placed in a world alongside people who were leaking, people who felt trapped in spiritual debt such that they didn't have enough available energy to offer us all the attention or the affection or the appreciation or the acceptance that we needed. It is not our fault. We felt pierced by these losses. But it is our choice whether or not we ever choose to swim back to shore, whether or not we ever reclaim our spirit. Thanksgiving, the way it really is learning to make good choices. And through them, finding ways that we can finally dance and sing and play and love. Thanksgiving, the way it really is rays of light streaming from the cracks in our body to the glory of life.